Assalamualaikum. Assalamualaikum. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alhamdulillah Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad wa ala tahirin.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad.
Continuing with our discussions on women, there are two common dilemmas in relation to women that are very common, especially in the West. One is in relation to chapter 4, verse 34, in relation to the hitting or beating or striking of women. What does that mean? And inshallah, we'll go through four different positions on that. And the second question, if we have time, is why women aren't allowed to have more than one husband at a given time. Okay, chapter 4, verse 34. الرجالُ قَوَّامُونَ عَلَى النِّسَاءِ. The verse starts with by saying that men are the maintainers. Someone is قَوَّام when they're responsible for the personal affairs of someone else. So maintaining is a loose translation of, or supporters or protectors over their wives. This is not man over woman. It's man over his wife. He's responsible in relation to a certain number of things. بِمَا فَدَّلَ اللَّهُ بَعْضَهُمْ عَلَى بَعْضٍ. Because of that which Allah has graced some of them over others. And I'll explain what that means in a minute. وَبِمَا أَنْفَقُوا مِنْ أَمْوَالِهِمْ. And because that they support and spend from their means, their property, their wealth. So because of that strength that they have and the finances that they have and they spend for the women, in Islam they're assigned this responsibility to provide. Now if a man and a woman before marriage they come to mutual consent that let's make it 50-50, it's okay. If they come to mutual consent that the woman is the breadwinner and the man stays at home, if there's mutual consent in regard to this, that's okay. This is the red line, that if differences arise, arguments arise, problems arise, if they go and they don't sort it out, if they go to the court, this is the red line. The court will say the man has to provide all those expenses because of that inner stature of the man and his responsibilities in relation to giving. And the reason for that, last night when we said women are nurturers by essence, men are providers by essence. I can't enter that into detail right now, but the traditions which we discussed last night and the logic of the Quran supports the fact that the female soul is a nurturer by essence, and that nurturing capacity shouldn't be compromised. And the Sharia is based on this, many of its rulings. For men, they're providers by essence. And they manifest certain attributes of Allah that women can't do as much. Whereas women, they manifested certain attributes which men can't do as much. Manifesting Allah's rububiyya, rahmaniyya, and so on and so forth. And that's why one of the wisdoms why homosexuality is haram, because a man can't acquire proximity through another man. Because that man doesn't have those certain divine attributes that a woman has. And the other way around. Permanent marriage, it's a holy endeavor. It's to get closer to Allah. Through those attributes in the other party, you get closer to Allah. فَالصَّالِحَاتُ, the righteous women, are قَانِتَاتُ, they're obedient, devout. حَافِظَاتٌ لِلْغَيْبِ بِمَا حَفِظَ اللَّهُ. And they are preserving in the absence of their husband in relation to that which Allah has ordered them to preserve. Wallati takhafuna nushuzahunna. It starts here now. And those that you fear their nushuz, those that you fear their disobedience. What kind of disobedience is it? I'll come to that in a minute. Because we said, if you recall last night, the man has 101 wajib duties under the umbrella of the nafaqa. The woman, though, was free. There are only two duties that she has to do. And she has to do those in proportion to how much the man does his share. That's the red line for her. One of those two duties that she has to do is that she has to let the man know where she is. So she has to get permission when she exits the house. Now that doesn't mean that this can be abused sometimes. And for example, if a man marries a female doctor, and on marriage he knows that this woman is a professional worker, has to work, so on and so forth, or is a nurse, an architect, whatever. After the marriage, he can't waver this right. Because on entering this marriage, it was evident that she is a professional worker. The other wajib duty is sexual gratification, and that also doesn't mean the woman to be abused or anything. But if there's an excuse, she has ill health or whatever, yes. Otherwise, without an excuse, the man has that right to be gratified sexually. These two are wajib for the woman. But even these two are lessened, and she doesn't have to do them, if the man fails in his duties. Now here, it's speaking about that gratification. That those women who you fear their disobedience, they're ignoring you in that domain, they're not gratifying the man, and they don't have an excuse for not gratifying the man. If that's the case, and you fear their disobedience in this regard, now a protocol is given in the Holy Quran. This protocol is a protocol of Amr bin Ma'ruf and Nahy an al-Munkar. And this is very important, and gives three steps. And these three steps have to be abided in its order. In Amr bin Ma'ruf, if a scenario arises where the woman out of disobedience is not gratifying, the man is taught to undergo these three steps. But in Amr bin Ma'ruf, you only execute it if you deem it probable it will be of effect. If you don't deem it probable, you shouldn't do it. And that's an important point to bear in mind at the end, inshallah. It will be evident why. So the first step is fa'idhuna, fa'idhuhunna. Counsel them, advise them, speak with them. They may have a problem. Usually, with just speaking with one another, 99% of problems are solved. Here, in all cases, it's always probable that you can always have an effect by advising her, speaking with her, counseling her, consulting with her. What's the problem? Can this be sorted in any way? Sometimes it may be going to therapy, it doesn't matter. Those who have come from abroad to America, yes, for them it's difficult to get therapy or counseling sessions in marriage, because it's something which they never experienced back home. But their children, grandchildren, yes, they're okay with it. And as Muslims, you shouldn't be afraid of counseling, especially between spouses when problems arise. If you go to therapy, the sooner you go, the lesser the probability of difficulties arising later on, or a divorce happening, and so on and so on. So yes, if there's a local sheikh you have access to, it's always good to go to the local sheikh. If you don't have access, if there's a Muslim counselor, that's good. But if you can't find anyone, it's okay to go to a non-Muslim counselor. Okay, they may not understand your religion, but they have some tools and ways of therapy which are universal, some of them. Doesn't matter where you're from, and it can help. So here, the first step, Islam says, speak with them. That's it. It can be easily sorted. In most cases, it should be sorted, finished. She was disobedient in this area, and we're assuming the man gave all the nafaqa. Otherwise, she, in proportion to how much the man doesn't give the nafaqa, she has that leeway. But let's say the man, assuming he's given all the nafaqa, and I'm speaking as a man, and how many men really give all that nafaqa? So men shouldn't be too adamant on their rights against the women. The women, if they want, they can also express their rights. Then it will be an ugly thing. The best course of action for a man and woman is not to go to the letter of the law. You sort it out with ethics and akhlaq, with mutual consent. You come to a decision and you live with one another. This is only when differences arise. Differences in this particular area, domain of gratification. So, she disobeys, we're assuming the man gives the whole nafaqa. What should he do first? Mu'izah, counseling, advising. Does the man deem it probable it will be of effect? Yes. Speaking, at least it's probable that it'll have some effect, so it's wajib for the man to do this. It's amr bil ma'ruf. It's wajib, and it's step one. Let's say this doesn't work. Then Islam here, according to this verse of the Quran, says go to step two. What is step two? وَحْجُرُوهُنَّ فِي الْمَضَاجِعِ. Discard them in the bed. And that doesn't mean you have to get out of the room or anything, but in the bed you abandon them. You discard them. Don't pay heed to them at all. The question arises here, do you deem this probable it will be of effect? If the answer is no, you don't do it. If the answer is yes, you do it, it's wajib. You see, you have always bear the criteria of Amr bin Ma'ruf. If you look at this verse, outside the realms of Amr bin Ma'ruf, it's going to have a very twisted interpretation. If this doesn't work, then you go to step three. And step three is where the West criticizes the Quran most, and brings this as a very common dilemma. Because step three is وَادْرِبُوا هُنَّ. Now, let's loosely translate that as hit them, or beat them, or strike them. Strike is the most accurate. I'll use strike for now, but either is possible. Okay, strike them. Now, what does this mean? Now, there are four theories amongst the scholars that I have been able to find for now. Four different positions. There are some who believe it's a physical hitting, where you hit the woman. The reason that's not accepted by the majority is because it goes against the logic of the Quran. It goes against explicit traditions that causing any coloration change in the skin of a person, let alone your wife, is haram. Even a slight redness. If you hit them and cause a slight redness, or if you pinch them, it causes a slight redness. That is a haram act. So it can't be this physical hitting. This is a minority position of scholars. And they were from the earlier scholars. Today, I don't think anyone has this position. So hitting, that's not acceptable according to the logic of Islam. Also, it's a form of, anything that qualifies as an oppression, anything that qualifies as dhulm is also haram in Islam. Now that can change from time to time. The some things in Islam which is haram, they remain haram until the end. But some things which Islam hasn't said, it's haram. Once upon a time, it wasn't seen as an oppression, and it wasn't against the verse of the Holy Quran either. But then it's seen as an act of oppression. That's it, because it's haram. Whatever qualifies as dhulm is haram. And this hitting is also a mistah of dhulm. Even if there was no coloration, the ways of hitting someone in Guantanamo and Al-Ghuraib, you've seen the pictures where, in order to avoid them seeing the signs of torture, they have techniques nowadays. There's no coloration. Does that mean it's not haram? No, it still qualifies as an act of oppression, what they're doing. So that's the first day isn't really something which can be supported in Islam. The second is also a position, and even today many scholars have had it, and one marja also has put this position forward, one of the common marja. And when this position came out, a lot of secular feminists, Muslim feminists, they liked this a lot, and they even thanked the marja for giving this position. Now what is this position? They say, وَدْرِبُوهُنَّ, strike them, means travel away from them. And they interpret this as saying, go outside the city or go to another place. Get out of the house for a period of time. And the question is, we have to ask them, what's your proof? They say the Quran. We say, where in the Quran? It's in chapter 3, verse 156. There it says, إِذَا ذَرَبُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ, when they travel in the land. ذَرَبُوا is used, ذَرَب has many meanings. One of its meanings in the Quran has it is traveling. إِذَا ذَرَبُوا, when they travel, فِي الْأَرْضِ, in the land. So in that verse, وَدْرِبُوهُنَّ, it means, travel away from them, the women. Now, first of all, when secularists, those who have that secular understanding of religion, if such a thing is possible, they have a very apologetic stance. We should never be apologetic. If you don't understand, you have to say, I don't know, but this is the Quranic line. But you can't get Western ideals, make them conformity with the Quran just to make it fit and to please Westerners. The Quran is explicit at times. It gives a clear stance. There's no room to have an apologetic stance. Being apologetic with the Quran is not acceptable. One has to be very proud. Never give in. But your ego, eliminate that if you don't understand it. Instead of going to Western values and putting that in conformity with Quranic ideals, trying to make them compatible by force, with your deficient aql, our aql at the end of the day is deficient, that's not acceptable. That's even, disrespecting the Quran. Just say you don't understand. Here, the problem is with this verse is that the problem of prepositions here. Because in chapter 356, when they travel, fill out. Fi means in. It's a preposition. When they travel in the land. Now here, there are no prepositions in this verse. It says, وَادْرِبُوا هُنَّ. There are no prepositions. What are you going to say? Travel them? Because there are no prepositions here. The translation, you can't just make it up here. If you want to use traveling here, you have to say, travel them. This from them, where did you get it from? Travel away from them? No. That's one difficulty. The second difficulty with this position is that we have no backing. We have no support for it in the vast compendium of traditions from the Ahlul Bayt. If there was one or two things that could, you know, at least we can say it's a probable position. But there's nothing to show that وَادْرِبُوا هُنَّ means traveling them. Even if it were to make sense. So that also is difficult, but one manager has said it. It's a legitimate position. That manager is a manager. He, you know, he's an expert, much more than me or most people. But these dilemmas have to be answered. Then there's a third position and a fourth position. These two are both acceptable. The fourth position is a very irfani position. The third position is also acceptable and has support from the traditions. Here, in the third position, it's saying that this hitting, we accept there's a hitting. We accept there's a hitting. And that hitting is a physical hitting. And it should be done with the miswak, the toothbrushes of those days which were wooden from a tree. And you strike them, but don't change the color of their skin. وَادْرِبُوا هُنَّ, strike them with that miswak. It doesn't say اِتْعَنُوا هُنَّ, you know, poke them or something. Strike them with the miswak. But it shouldn't be a discoloration of the skin shouldn't arise, because that's haram. They accept that, but they say this, it's better not to do that, rather they give this is the third position. It says, we accept the physical hitting with the miswak, the physical striking with the miswak, as long as no discoloration arises, but it's better not even to do that, to do this instead. What? Don't give them the nafaqe. Hit them, strike them by not giving the nafaqe. This makes a lot of sense now. Because in fiqh, remember when we said the women can disobey the man in those two things if the man doesn't give his nafaqe? The man also can not give the nafaqe if the woman disobeys in those two areas. The man cannot give the nafaqa. In one of those areas, which the verses I'm discussing, if you feel that she's being disobedient in that area, hit them with the nafaqa. Don't give the nafaqa. It's a fiqhi ruling. We have plenty of support. Now, two traditions from the Holy Messenger, I'll quickly read through them. أَيَدْرِبُ أَحَدُكُمُ الْمَرْأَى ثُمَّ يَدِلُّ مَعَانِقَهَا. Do any of you, you hit the women and then you embrace them in your arms? It's saying in a tone where this is a contradiction in terms. How can you do that? إِنِّي أَتَعَجَّبُ, I'm surprised, the Holy Prophet says, مِمَّا يَدْرِبْ إِمْرَأَتَهُ وَهُوَ بِالذَّارْ أَوْلَى مِنْهَا. I'm surprised at one who hits his wife when he is more deserving to be hit. لَا تَدْرِبُوا نِسَاءَكُمْ بِالْحَشَبْ. Don't hit your women with wood, with the miswak. Now some tradition says if you hit them with the miswak. Here it says don't hit them. When you see this apparent incompatibility, this second verse, the second tradition says don't hit them, it means it's better not to hit them. You're allowed to hit them with the miswak, but it's better not to hit them. فَإِنَّ فِيهِ الْقِصَاصِ Because verily in this, this qisas, there's going to be blood money if it changes the coloration of the skin. وَلَكِنْ Nevertheless, however, what should you do? اِدْرِبُوهُنَّ Look, the exact word of the Qur'an. فَاتْرِبُوهُنَّ If you take the fa away, then hit them, take the fa then away, it becomes اِدْرِبُوهُنَّ Hit them بِالْجُوءِ وَالْعُرَى حَتَّى تُرِيهُ فِي الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةِ Hit them with hunger, nafaqah in food that the man has to provide, and clothing, nafaqah in clothing that the man has to provide. The man has a set of things that he has to provide them with. In these two, where the food, the man has to provide the food and the clothing for the woman, hit them with this. And then the verse continues, حَتَّى تُرِيهُ Until you have peace, comfort in the dunya and in akhirah. Say that this is better than hitting them with the miswak. But the miswak is okay, but this is better. In the fourth position, which is a very delicate position, this fourth position is no, it's the miswak. Hit them with the miswak. Hit the woman with the miswak. However, the question arises now. And one is that there should be no discoloration of skin. But this is Amr bil Ma'ruf. You have to answer one question before you execute this hitting. And that is, do you deem it probable that this striking with a miswak in a very light manner, so no coloration arises, do you deem it probable that this will be of any effect to the woman? She will change her ways. Now this is the delicate point. This verse, which is attacked by the West for being a brutal, criminal, rough, Daeshi verse, actually it's the most delicate and sensitive verses of the Quran, teaching us how the relationship between man and woman should be. And that is, you should relate with one another to such a degree that were the man to strike you with a miswak, it will disappoint you. It will have an effect upon you, that you will change your ways. Look, the whole thing has changed now with this interpretation. And in the fourth period, they're keeping with the miswak too. Now, we shouldn't be pessimistic, I know. I mean, no one is perfect with their wives. But when a relationship is full of swearing and hitting physically from both sides, and they swear at one another, they disrespect, this will be of no effect. This hitting with a miswak. And so why the rebu'honna? You shouldn't even execute it. It's only if you deem it probable. For most of us, most probably only the first step is exercisable. The other two, it won't have an effect. So this is something very important that we have to be able to, you know, without taking an apologetic stance, we have to be very frank with it. Okay, I have 5 or 10 minutes, so with your permission, I'll just raise this next issue also. The question is, why can't, this is a very also a common question, why can't women have more than one husband at a given time? Men in permanent marriages, they can have up to four. Women, no. Only one woman, only one man. Although, this question of men marrying up to four, in the Quran it does bring this clause, فَإِنْ خِفْتُمْ أن لا تعدلوا فواحدة. That if you fear, even if you fear that you can't exercise justice in the nafaqa, justice in many things. I'll explain some of them in a minute. If you can't exercise justice, only one, then it's one. Now, it's a definite that 99% of those who have more than one wife, well, I don't want to generalize, maybe less than 99%, but they can't exercise the justice. It's difficult to exercise that justice. In some countries, yes, it's easier for them, because this is a norm. But in the West, I haven't seen it. It's difficult. It's difficult to exercise that justice. For example, giving nafaqa to them as they should be given nafaqa. It's difficult to exercise justice there. Or for example, sleeping with them equally. Not even, you know, getting involved in that action. Even sleeping, lying down with them equally. Islam has very specific rules here. This is the rule of Muzawwaje. Ayatollah Sistani accepts it. He has it in his wasada. It's a very difficult ruling. I don't want to go into the particularities of it. But when you have, with one wife, it's difficult for many. When you have two, it even becomes more difficult. There are many things that have to be abided in the nafaqa. Otherwise, it's not something which has been commended, especially when it leads to more vice than virtue. When you know that you're going to get the second one, it's going to cause problems with the first, why would you enter such a deal? Why would you enter such a relationship? Why are you accumulating haqq or nas for yourself? That's why even divorces always in the Quran, if it comes to a divorce as a last resort, do it in the best possible way. Because if this divorce results in an ugly fashion, the man is going to have a lot of haqq or nas stuck with him until the rest of his life. And the Quran says do it bil ma'ruf, do it in the best way. So I'm not saying that it may be a last resort for many, but if it is, make sure you don't make it ugly. Even if it means you give everything to the woman, make sure that when it ends, you're free. Otherwise, that haqq or nas is going to be with you until the end of your life. So here, men are allowed, but with women, no. But even with men, if an injustice is going to arise, don't do it. فَوَاهِدَ. Now, why isn't the woman allowed to have more than one husband at a given time? This has been answered in the traditions 1400 years ago, where one of the imams gives one of the wisdoms behind it. And this wisdom is on a par with 1400 years ago. It may not apply today. And that is, if you have four cups of water and then you spill the four cups, now put the water of each cup in that respective cup. Is it possible? No. If a woman has four husbands and then she becomes pregnant, can you tell which one it is? 1400 years ago, you couldn't. Now the question is, today you can. So can they marry? No, that was a wisdom. One of the wisdoms, it wasn't the ratio legis behind why a woman can't have more than one husband. It was just a wisdom. The Imam was speaking to a people of a particular degree and capacity of intellect just to make them satisfied. That's how the Imams would usually speak. They would speak in a manner just to make them content. They wouldn't go into the inner reasoning all the time with people who have limited capacities 1400 years ago. With their ashab or sir, their secret disciples, yes, they would enter the finest of details. But not for the common Joe Blogs of 1400 years ago. So now we have DNA. Why can't they do it now? The answer that the Orafo gave is that, look, and we discussed this yesterday, because yesterday we started with discussing what the womb is, the Erfar of the womb. And we spoke to some degree. Then we said the woman, the female soul, is a nurturer by essence. And this physical womb is a manifestation of that soul. She's a nurturer. She has to nurture. Then we said when the child's in the stomach, in the womb of the woman, her thoughts, her intentions, her actions are molding this child, are shaping this child. The child's faith, the child's ethics, the child's temperament, the child's akhlaq, the child's disposition are being shaped in these 9 months. The man had a very limited role in the shaping in those 9 months. It's all about the woman. From that unicellular embryo to a 3 kilogram child, that's a physical shaping, but existentially, ethically, dispositionally, she's shaping this child. Now you imagine a woman has 2, 3, or 4 husbands, and she's pregnant with one of them, and she knows who that one is. And then she interacts with those other 3 too. Look at the thoughts of the woman. Those 3 other husbands, or 2 other husbands, or 1 other husband, he wants to do things with the woman. He wants to speak with the woman, talk with the woman. Look at the thoughts of the woman of becoming contaminated. It's as if, I stress, as if that child in the womb is being raped, spiritually raped. When the woman is nurturing this child and there are 4 men she's dealing with, that offspring is being raped. It's going to be messed up. And we have many traditions that if the woman is thinking of certain things, even during conception, it'll have a negative effect. It's a long tradition. Let alone dealing with 3 or 4 other men. See, Islam is after the best interest and the well-being of the child here. And there are one woman, if they want to have children, if they want to marry, it has to be one husband. They can't have more. Now someone may say, what if they don't want to have a child? And say she doesn't want. Look, we said that she's a nurturer by essence. Now being a nurturer isn't confined to the home place. At school, in the hospital, at university, there too she has to nurture. Her nurturing capacity is going to be compromised when she's dealing with more than one man. It's going to be messed up. Her thoughts are going to be messed up. And that nurturing will be compromised and society will be affected. So this also goes back to the fact that she's a nurturer. And that's why this discussion is very important. Inshallah, we'll continue with this tomorrow. Sallallahu alaihi wasallam.